Welcome to the Tech Money Podcast, where the worlds of technology and personal finance collide. Hosted by certified financial planner, speaker, blogger, and self-proclaimed personal finance nerd, Malcolm Etheridge. Each episode aims to make you just a little bit smarter about your money, all from the perspective of the tech professional. Without further delay, here's your host.
Hey there, listeners. Malcolm here. And on today's episode, we're talking about financial therapy. More specifically, we're talking about the difference between financial therapy and traditional financial planning. By definition, financial therapy is a process designed to help people think, feel, and behave differently with money using evidence-based practices and interventions to guide them. And by contrast, financial planning is a process of determining a few financial goals, the time allotted to reach them, and the resources that will be available along the way to help fund each of those goals. If you've ever wanted to peel back a couple of layers to better understand how your money mindset was ever even formed in the first place, or maybe why some of the people around you always seem to have it all figured out when it comes to their personal finances, while you're still stuck at first base, or if you continually find yourself asking why, for your spouse or partner, certain negative financial habits just seem so hard to break, even when the better decision seems so obvious to you, then this episode is definitely for you. I'll be speaking with the brand new president-elect of the Financial Therapy Association, Dr. Preston Cherry. In addition to his work with the FTA, Preston is a doctor of philosophy with a PhD in general financial planning. He's also a professor of personal finance at the University of Wisconsin at Green Bay, a certified financial planner, and he's the founder and president of Concurrent Financial Planning. Needless to say, this guy is both passionate about the profession and he knows how to keep himself busy, obviously. So with that brief introduction, welcome Dr. Preston Cherry to the Tech Money Podcast.
Hi, Malcolm. Thank you for having me. Really appreciate it.
So I breezed through your resume a little bit, as I like to do, while introducing you. What did I miss?
Well, not too much. I do keep myself busy. We are starting a personal financial planning program here at UWGB for short. As you mentioned, I do run a practice. I do some coaching, some advisor coaching as well. I do mentorship for the up-and-coming planners in the profession. I also do, the coaching is for the professionals as well. So I do coaching on the beginning end of the spectrum and then the middle and later ends of the spectrum as well. So, and then just a lot of board work in the profession just to try to make an impact on any way that I can. You are spot on there. I do keep busy.
To say the least. As I mentioned in the lead up, right, financial therapy is a process around thinking and feeling as it pertains to your money, right? Along with some evidence-based interventions, as you guys like to say. So to me, that sounds like I'll end up sitting on a couch with a psychologist talking about my earliest money memories and my relationship with my parents and shedding a few tears. Like, is that even close to accurate?
You could. Because financial therapy, yes, when you're talking about sitting down with a clinician, you know, a trained medical clinician, that you're going through therapy. So as the organizational title suggests, you're talking about a deeper discovery process and also a deeper relationship or feeling about money. Something is hindering you in a sense that it's more of a really a life event or a life feeling or a well-being matter that must be unpacked and discovered before we even address the financial planning aspect of it. So you're talking about really opening up about one's emotion, discovering something that may have been known or not known consciously or subconsciously. All right. So there's just many different ways a trained therapist, particularly a financial therapist, because this is a specific field that can speak with you to uncover these emotions, behavioral aspects, psychological aspects that are potentially hindering your progress with money.
Say a little bit more about that real quick, though. What type of training are your therapists undergoing that help them to be able to understand how to even get in there, dig around and ask those questions to try and bring people to some sort of end result?
Sure. So, see, I'm not trained in that area, not clinically trained. We'll talk about integrating some, you know, money psychology just in general into the financial planning process and what it allows. However, you know, some of my friends or colleagues that are in the FTA, you know, they are clinically trained. You're talking about, I'm of philosophy doctorate, but there's psychology, there's PsyD, right? Psychology doctorates. You're talking about they went through that training, that educational training in order to become a medical doctor, psychology doctor, in order to unpack those type of things.
Okay. So you got where I was going. These people spend some real time in school learning how to do this by profession. This is not a person who goes to Instagram University for a couple of weekends and then, you know, throws up a website and suddenly they become, you know, a financial therapist. This is a person who genuinely, like, this is what they do. So that's really the contrast that I wanted to make sure we got out there and help people to understand. Speaking of contrast, like I mentioned that the whole focus of this show was going to be financial planning versus financial therapy in its traditional sense. By definition, financial planning is a process determining a few financial goals, as I mentioned, the time allotted to reach them and the resources that you'll have available along the way to reach those goals, right? Like that's kind of the agreed upon definition by those of us in the field. How is that similar or different from financial therapy?
Right. So when you're talking about financial therapy, you're talking about, again, relational. So you're talking about marriage and family therapy. You're talking about behavioral psychology, emotion. Okay, those things, like you said at the top of the hour, you're talking about, you may shed a tear, you may shed some smiles, you may go through a whole realm of emotional discovery to unpack these relationships, connections, reactions, practices, all of these things with money. And that needs to be unpacked. There's a process for that just alone, right? That's why it's segmented. Okay, because that's why it's segmented. Then when somebody captures their well-being enough, okay, in all those areas, then we can start saying, okay, then let's enter into the financial planning process. Now, I'd like to piggyback off what we were talking about the clinicians, you know, the trained therapists. That doesn't mean that a financial planner cannot specialize in financial therapy exercises and practices, are knowing how to pick up on certain things, behavioral and emotional and relational and whatnot, and then have interventions or tools at their disposal to help their clients through that. However, when it gets to a level that it takes a medically trained individual or professional, excuse me, to really unpack those areas, then there needs to be a referral. And there are two separate processes when you're talking about the level of each of these. Now they can be integrated in practice, but when you're talking about somebody that really needs some therapy, then there's two separate processes.
So if I may put that succinctly a little bit, it sounds like hearing a financial planner basically helps you manage your money, right? Like the ones and zeros, the binary piece of it is where the financial planner comes into place. But the financial therapist is really helping you manage your thoughts and feelings and emotions, right, about money, the warm and fuzzies, if you will, about money.
Yes. I mean, again, there's two processes there. But I would say this, and I'm glad that you are drilling down on this part. The financial planning process, the steps, it allows for the planner to address with their client psychology of money, behaviors, emotions, relations, relationships with money, all of that. It allows for it. And it just hasn't been practiced continuously over the time span, as far as how planners practice. I mean, they're getting more into it now, the more personable side of financial planning, because it is personal financial planning. Okay. And it's really, when you're talking about getting to know, right, the step one is engaging, right, establishing the relationship. Then when you get into the step two of the process, you are learning more about your client, the values, the goals, okay, yes, the personal aspects. That step has always allowed for the discovery of the other aspects, your overall well-being approach and processing your relationship and your behaviors with money. It's always allowed for it.
That's why one of my favorite questions that I open with when I sit down with couples, you know, I sit across the table from husband and wife, and two people obviously think differently about everything really, but money specifically. One of my favorite questions to start with is just, tell me about your relationship with money. And just shut up and let them kind of give me sort of where they've been, where they come from. And you find out some really interesting things about people and their upbringings and everything else that goes into the way they think about money. And then you see them look sideways at each other, kind of like, I've never heard you say that before. I didn't know that was a thing. So it's really interesting to me. And you're right in that exercise to kind of understand your client. But let's talk for a moment about a phrase that I used in my opening, which is money mindset, right? Which I use kind of liberally, but basically just a way to describe the way a person thinks and feels about money in general, right? The way I just kind of mentioned it, that I open up the floor to a couple who I'm meeting with for one of our very first meetings. It's their like deep-seated beliefs or behaviors even as it pertains to their money. What are some of the more interesting money mindsets that you've encountered before, both good and bad?
Wow, there's so many. But you know, here's the thing too. People are not all that different. Folks are individuals and they're unique like fingerprints, okay? Mm-hmm. But when you get down to certain aspects of life, there's some very common similarities. If you have a family, you want your kids to have the best school, the best access to education, safety, you know, good food, provide a roof over your head, all these things. And people aspire, they try to gather the resources in order to deliver that to their loved ones. Similar things with money. You start seeing some repeats. It's kind of like having a rerun on a TV show. One consistent is uncertainty. Consistent uncertainty. Asking oneself all these questions. Do I have enough? Am I saving enough? Am I doing the right thing? Are we going down the right path? What's coming down the path that we don't know about? These are all the uncertainty. It's consistent. And you can, another word for that, or a couple of words that you can put in there is anxiety, right? Worry, stress. To your point, when you're talking about relationships, but it doesn't necessarily have to be relationships. You're talking about between spouses, parents and children. If one is single, there's that inner debate, right? A person gets person is kind of like literary, right? Man versus man and this, that, and the But so your marital status really doesn't matter, but that's a consistent battle to deal with those things. As you well know, it's the top stressor or in houses in the U.S. money, number one, and not necessarily how much of it you have, or you know, hey, we could be earning more. You're not earning enough. It's more about the uncertainty.
Yeah,
what's coming down the path? What we're not prepared for, and are we doing enough? Though that's really the discussion.
If I've got a person who is, as you're putting it, and we'll get to the stress side of it in a moment, but just the anxiety of, or the insecurity may even be a better word, of do I know enough? Am I doing enough? Do I know enough to make a decision here? Right. I can't make a decision because I'm not sure if I'm making the right decision, that sort of thing. Like how as a financial therapist, am I helping that person move beyond that blocking point?
The power is in the process.
Okay.
The power is in the process. And one has to, and I have my own process a little bit, and I call it the ah moment. And everybody's had their own individual ah moments, but I use three A's in mine, which is, first you have to admit that there is something, whatever that is, whatever we're talking about, there's something going on that we need to address. Okay, what is that subject? What is that issue? Or what is that matter of hand? then we have to acknowledge how we feel about that. All of those emotions that it could be, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a negative all the time, but and necessarily emotions are not negative either. It's, I don't want to put a stigma on it, but we want to acknowledge how we do feel. That's is it shame? Is it guilt? Is it am I overwhelmed? What is that? Overjoyed? Am I overconfident? That's a thing.
Yeah.
Being overconfident, that's a thing.
Oh, yeah.
What is that? Well, yeah, we'll get to that. Yes. It's like, oh, yeah, I'm good. I hear that a lot. I'm good. How's your finances? I'm good. It's like, the statistics don't bear that, and let me see that bank statement. But anyway, but yes, acknowledging your feelings, okay? And processing those, Malcolm. Processing those. Then we get to the action.
Okay.
Then we get to the action. And that process is in the, it could be in the therapy process, although that's not a proven framework or anything. There's certainly many frameworks empirically studied that do work. That's just my approach to it. Mm-hmm. But that's that process. Then we can get to the action of what we need to address, in this case, money. If we don't do the first two, okay? If we don't admit, we're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Period. Okay? So we can't get to the action. And if we don't acknowledge how we feel and process that, then we still can't get to the action. And then we get to the action. And then that's a hard part, too, is nudging folks to actually jump the broom, so to speak.
So the admitting is probably not the hard part as far as you're concerned, right? If I'm seeking out the wise counsel of a financial therapist, I've probably already admitted that something isn't right, right? It's the getting me to actually acknowledge the way I feel about it and then understanding the way that I feel about it is where I think the magic happens, so to speak. And this is obviously for me looking at it through the lens of somebody who isn't a financial therapist by any means, right? I don't really dig too much into the intangible side of this, right? The emotional side of it. But just thinking about it from my seat, what I do know, it seems like getting people to acknowledge their feelings and then understand those feelings is probably the toughest part about it. Would you agree?
Yes, understanding the feelings. And I would say admitting, you may be admitting to the wrong things. Just because you admit, you know, that you may admit to something that that you're comfortable speaking about or mm-hmm. think that that's the issue, and yet there's something else to admit to. So it could be a kind of like a bait and switch, but a deflection is the word I'm looking mm-hmm. for, mm-hmm. right? So that's one thing. So actually, each step has their difficulties and has their courage. Okay, vulnerability in order to enter and go through. Okay. Also, too, I know you're an experienced planner as well. We're not therapists, neither am I. I'm not a clinically trained therapist, but I can say this. Your money mindset is money psychology. It that's what it is. And that's why you said you kicked off a lot of your meetings with that type of question. All right. It's because you do need to have people walk themselves into their relationships with money rather than you telling them. Having a process to discover or unpack things. Like you've asked me a couple of times already on this show, which is, okay, here's the main question. Have that person give you the dialogue back and then say, okay, let's unpack that. You see, that's where that admit stage is and even at that acknowledge stage, okay? They started off with an answer. Mm-hmm. But yet when they started talking, they said, let's unpack it. That's where the magic is.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
What about when something bad happens to us, right? And not even like in a catastrophic sense, just about a bad money decision, right? There's some shame associated with being such a smart person and just making a bad financial decision, right? Which a lot of people tend to do every once in a while. And then you're not open to advice down the road when somebody offers it to you, right? Because you're still focused on that one time you made the mistake. And you've probably seen this too, right? Folks tend to clam up because they don't want to have to deal with the shame of having made that bad decision. If they work with you or talk to you, that means they've got to actually admit to that thing that they did using one of your action words. How do you keep them focused and kind of help them work past that sticking point as a practitioner?
There's a few things, and these may sound cliche. However, I was watching a TV show one time, and it said, "Why do you always use cliches?" I said, "Because they work." You know, yeah. I mean, some of them are tried and true, but you want to build that. That a lot of what we do is about trust. Mm-hmm. It's about trust. So, that someone needs to feel that they're in an environment that, that they can be vulnerable. It may be totally against, you know, who they are to do such a thing. And like you said, you know, reaching out, somebody may be reaching out just for the money aspect of it, but unbeknownst to them that they're actually reaching out to have some more discovery about themselves. And that takes a lot of ingredients, a lot of factors. And like I said, trust, a nurturing environment almost, a welcoming environment. So that person in confidence environment. I also would say that it's on the professional, right? The planner or the therapist or whatnot, you know, tone inflections, eye contacts, just being open. Patience, Malcolm, patience. Letting someone work their way through a question. And repeating it if they need be. And somebody may say, you know, what do you mean by that? And you say, I'm glad you asked. And so you say, in other words, this, that, or, and another. And then let them process. Because they may be deflecting back upon you, so to give them a little time to process, right? Mm-hmm. But it's very important to let folks work their way through so they can start talking. There's some people that are on each side of the fence of this, Malcolm, which is... Mm-hmm. How much do you share? Okay. Mm-hmm. And listen, stories are what it is. That there's a reason why you can read a little kid a story and they go to sleep. Heck, if I hear a story right now and I'm a grown person and I'm going to sleep. Yeah. Right. But you know, stories help build relationships. They help build all those things of which I just spoke of, right? A nurturing environment, a trusting environment, confidence, being able to relatability, right? Vulnerability, all those things. So sharing, not oversharing, mm-hmm. but letting somebody know, hey, listen, you know, when the time is right, you don't want to kind of lead with that. But as they start talking, be like, I understand what you're saying. Here's an example right here, you know, and then have somebody relate with it.
So you're sharing your own experience as a way to kind of open up and let them know that it's okay. You're not the only one who has made X mistake or X type of mistake or what have you. Is that what I'm hearing?
That's very accurate. Yeah. Very accurate.
Like I'm thinking about, so a client of mine who's a fairly longstanding client, and I'll use her as my example because I know she'll laugh about it. We laugh about it now, but she wasn't laughing, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. But so this particular client is a physician, right? So we can already assume this person is of above average intelligence, right? To be able to go to school for 50,000 years to even become a physician, we have to assume that you've got some level of intelligence and sophistication about you, right? She's a single woman, right? So no kids, no husband to be concerned about providing for financially. And you can probably already tell where I'm going with this based on those two variables. But she, at the time we met, had 5 life insurance policies.
Wow.
No husband, no kids. At the time, she didn't own a home, and somebody had sold her 5 life insurance policies. Because physicians, one thing they're always concerned about is stuff is going to happen. And so they're very good about insuring all the different stuff that can happen that can get in the way or keep them from being a physician tomorrow. So much so that she allowed this person to just heap all these different policies on her. And one of them we couldn't even get out of because it was so binding and so like just like ridiculous the way it was set up. But when we first met, like we had to have 4 conversations before, to your point, she trusted that I wasn't trying to sell her something on top of it to collect a commission and ride off into the sunset, because she was so upset with herself for feeling like she had gotten taken. I had to do everything I could not to harp on the fact that like, this is bad. Like you're paying tens of thousands of dollars a year for something you are never going to really see the benefit of, because the way we normally place insurance with clients, it's because you want to provide financially for a person or a thing that's going to be left behind, you know, once you are no longer here. And in this case, it didn't exist. So it just didn't make sense that at least this much insurance would be in the way. But like I said, it took four meetings. I'll say it probably took a year of conversation after we were first introduced before she finally opened up and was willing to take advice and hear an alternate solution, because she was so upset and couldn't get past that mental hurdle of, I can't believe I did this. I feel like I'm supposed to be such a smart person that I can't believe I made such a big mistake. Right. And so that causes, I mentioned stress before and said I was going to figure out a way to tie it back in. So this is that, just so you know. So, that creates like this stress on you of, I can't believe I did that. I'm supposed to be this smart person. Everybody in my family or whatever knows me to be a person who's pretty good about making decisions, pretty good with money, whatever. Even for people who are in pretty good financial shape, there's stress around managing money, right? And that old age saying, more money, more problems, right, does actually ring true for some people. And so I've even seen where rather than take any action at all, similar to the situation I just described, where for a year she didn't do anything, folks will opt out and just say, I'm not going to do anything, and continue putting off having to deal with their finances in perpetuity. In some cases, we'll call it paralysis by analysis, right? That's the term we love to use in our textbooks. And I know, again, fear may be a part of that one as well, but the fear of making a wrong decision keeps you from making a decision at all. How do you keep people from getting stuck there? Or how do you help people move through that mental hurdle?
So much there to unpack. Wow.
You're welcome.
That's great stuff.
No softballs.
Right. Well, there's too many. I got to hit one of them. What you mentioned stress. And one thing people carry around, an alternate word for that is a burden. They carry around a burden of guilt, burden of shame, burden of fear of wrong decisions, burden of not knowing. And, you know, that's just life, which is one. And this is, here's that process, right? One must forgive oneself. You know, after you admit, you got to forgive yourself in order to move on. So and to your question, you know, how do you let somebody get to that point? And I would reiterate patience. See, you offered the environment for that client, Malcolm, to juxtapose from what her experiences were with other professionals. But see, you offered patience in a different environment. Okay, you cultivated that. So that's why she came around. Remember, we were talking about, why do we use quote unquote cliches, but it's not necessarily cliches. Sometimes we overanalyze, over evidence based, over this, over that. And sometimes the simplest approach is the right approach. Most of the time it is. And in your story, you simply offered a different environment for her to gain trust and comfort on her own time so she could process what she was going through and arrive at it at her own time. You have a client for life there. It's a
relationship. Oh, absolutely.
No question.
Yeah.
So those are the things that I saw in your story. And patience was one of them.
Sticking with the whole stress piece for a second, and I apologize to anybody who's listening to this, and now I'm creating feelings of stress for you. But so I've noticed some employers over the last, I'll say 5-ish years, probably been longer than that, some employers have been making financial wellness a priority and offering different variations of these services to their employees around this, whether it's meeting with a financial therapist or a financial coach or a financial planner or automated virtual classes that they subscribe to on behalf of their employees, all those kind of things. Why do you think that is?
Well, I mean, there's the old age adage that we can talk about productivity when you're at the work, when you're at the workplace, if you have something going on in your life, all right, that negates productivity. We want healthy relationships at work. You know, now the common practices, or I guess it may or may not be common, but it's actually trending that way, is we want our workplaces to be more interactive, right? More well-rounded, you know, well-being, if you may. Workplaces just weren't approached like that back in the day, right? And if we're able to build these environments to where we can collaborate, care for one another, be considerate. We're there to work. I mean, so we're not going to just go around a circle and hold hands. But at the same time, if we're healthy all around, that's the same reason why gym memberships, there's gyms on campuses, work campuses now, or you get discounted gym memberships and whatnot, is because that's all a part about well-being. And well-being packages consider psychology as well. It's like, okay, we want to discover something before it becomes an issue, or if it is an issue, then we want to take care of it so we can have all these positive aspects or positive outcomes coming from it.
Say more about the other side of that for a second, though. You're talking about the goodies and what happens when you offer these services. Talk for a second about how financial stress might keep somebody from being able to function in their role at work.
Okay, I mean, we will talk about bill collectors and whatnot. I mean, come on now. I mean, listen. I just heard that I think bill collectors are going to go start through social media now. I believe that's a thing.
Oh, man.
I believe that's so. I got to look more into it. But, you know, you have to worry about being worried about being found out. Okay. In any aspect of life, but you're worrying about getting that call at work, getting discovered that you may have maybe an eviction notice coming, even though you may take care of your finance. Look, we're in this pandemic right now. You know, nobody wants to admit that or voice that they're going through a stage to where it's a possibility that they may have to leave their home or whatnot. Mm-hmm. So it's that burden. Again, we're talking about a burden. We're talking about a burden of being found out, okay? Mm. That fractures your concentration. That fractures your esteem. These are all inputs that you need in order to be successful at any job that you do, okay? So if you're carrying around those burdens and those fears and that anxiety, okay, then that affects what you're trying to do professionally.
Yeah, it's interesting let me first give your disclaimer that I'm not a clinically trained psychologist before I say this, right? But it's interesting how stress in general just shuts down a person's good decision making, right? So if you're starving, like not hungry, but literally starving, the only thing you can think about is food, right? The only thing you can think about in the moment when you are starving is how to get food. Your body can't function and think about and do anything else because it needs food. So we watch the news one day and we're flipping through channels and they tell you about a guy who went to jail because he robbed Subway for a $5 sandwich, right? And we're like, how could a person be that stupid? It's a $5 sandwich. All you have to do is ask 10 people and somebody would have given you $5. But we can't quite put ourselves in the mindset of a person who is so hungry that stealing a $5 sandwich felt like a good idea in the moment, because that's what stress does to us, right? So you can only imagine the financial decision-making sometimes that comes from having that same level of stress on you from, to your point, where am I going to sleep tonight? I got this bill collector hunting me down. They're trying to take my car back and all these different things. And so it's interesting, again, that workplaces have taken up the mantle of, we are going to provide you with some services as part of your overall benefits package to help make sure that as few of you as possible can be in these situations. The better off you all are, the more productive you all are, which then means that we get it back in the form of productivity here at work. And then to the point you were making real quick, and then I'll move on, but you made a point about being found out. And that was interesting to me because it triggered a thought that I had about these studies that I keep seeing where people in human resources are getting stressed out because they're having to go to people at work and approve or not approve their requests for hardship withdrawals from their 401k plans. And so they're having to be the person that's seen as the gatekeeper between me getting access to the cash that I need to stay in my house, as an example that you used, or to keep food in my kids' bellies or whatever. The HR person is being seen as the blockade to me being able to do that because it's been put on the HR person to approve or not approve those hardship withdrawal requests. So really interesting dynamic there. And you know, obviously it'll be far more to come out on it as time goes on. And I'm sure coming out of the current COVID crisis, like there'll be quite a bit of financial wreckage, right? There's just no way to get away from 20 million or so jobs lost through this whole thing, call it a year and a half, 2 years, whatever it ultimately ends up being, there's no way that the pandemic's not going to have a lasting effect, right? And that it's not only exposed inequities all throughout this country, it's also unfortunately created some new ones, right? So right. What are some of the ways that you foresee financial therapy will be able to help fill that need and help people get their lives back on track?
Yeah, I believe it's going to be in high demand. And if I just want to interject one more thing on that point that we were trying to make, too. I want to go up a rung, so to speak, on the social economic class as well. There's this big myth that the only people that have, quote unquote, issues or problems with money are the, quote unquote, lower middle class or the middle class or the poor or whatnot. Now, being found out with an abundance of resources, so to speak, you could be over-levered. There's a being found out of being, I think it was an old, I forgot what rapper said, is no fronting in your future, no future on your fronting, right? And that's old school. I just dated myself. But it's being found out that way as well, okay? Oh, I'm sending my kid or my child to college, and oh, I'm paying for it every semester, this, that, and the other, okay? But then that's stress and worry because there's difficulty in that. Or I have these X, Y, and Z cars, or these X, Y, and Z clothes, or I've taken these X, Y, and Z trips going to the golf tournaments and whatnot. There's stress of being found out in that as well. So I just wanted to address this myth that money problems, so to speak, even with psychology and emotion, is all wrapped up into certain demographics and certain socioeconomic classes.
I said it and said it a little bit in jest, but no, to quote the great philosopher Christopher Wallace one more time, more money, more problems is a serious notion. You have what I like to call high class problems. You know, that's the way I describe it to my clients, but it's a problem to be solved nonetheless. So no, super, super interesting point and very important to point out. But in traditional financial planning, right, bringing it back to the compare contrast again, the certified financial planner designation has emerged as the gold standard to let the public consumer know whether their practitioner they want to hire is at the top of their game or not, right? Is there a set of letters in the financial therapy community that would reliably guide a consumer to a quality practitioner the same way the CFP guides people to a quality financial planner practitioner?
Sure. And being that, to your previous point, the pandemic is going to more than likely increase services or demand, at least for both financial therapy itself and also financial planning. This is a little difficult when you're talking about a therapist per se. Through the Financial Therapy Association, we've came up with we've created a new designation. You know, it doesn't say that you are a trained clinician. Okay, it does not say that. You know, it doesn't say that you're medically trained to be a therapist. What it does say is that you are familiar with some of the tools and methods to have a conversation with a client about their money psychology, their money behaviors and relationals, dealings with money and whatnot. It's called the Certified Financial Therapist, and right now it's level one, so it is a designation. Again, I just want to just stress that it doesn't signal that you're a trained clinician, but it is a signal nonetheless. You've taken the time to read. There's a lot of books. There's a lot of sessions. It is an educational hurdle, an informational hurdle, a time hurdle in order to invest into this knowledge. All right. So if someone does have that designation, they have attempted to specialize in an area. So sort of like any other specialty area, whether it be charitable giving or you know, certified divorce specialist or retirement or whatnot. Then the designation list continues.
And that was a certified financial therapist, you said?
Yes. Okay. Yes. CFT.
Yeah. I want the cheat code, man. We as humans using heuristics, there's the word I was looking for. We're trained to try and find the cheat code, right? We want to get to the answer as quickly as possible so that we can move to the next thing. So that's what I was looking for, the certified financial therapist. But it sounds like you had another one for me.
Yes. And this is a little bit more difficult to find. And this is just investigating the firm and the practitioner and seeing what is their philosophy about going about managing your personal finances. What is that? And they can be conveyed on a website sometimes. And if your website is good enough, then it should be. How is that? And I say that to say this: life-centered planning is a very much a thing. That's how I practice. My philosophy is, you use money mindset. Mine is life money balance. Mm-hmm. It's aligning your life with your money. They have to work. That's where my firm is concurrent. They have to work concurrently in partnership, in the same direction, in order to make the most transformational impact on one's life. Finding out what having a life-centered planning process, which is discovery, which takes courage and boldness to say, what do you actually want to reveal, say, uncover, dream, aspire? What's holding you back, do you think? Can you share that with me? What would you like to do differently? What would you see differently in a perfect scenario? That is a philosophy in and of itself, all right? So if somebody sees that on a website or hears somebody on a podcast or in an article or something like that, it's that investigating the philosophy. That's something to think you want to ask for maybe in that initial consultation. Many professionals they offer that meet and greet, okay? And we see these questions all the time with top 10 things you need to ask your advisor, right? And this is one of, what is your philosophical approach to helping people with their money, okay? And that's one way to do it as well.
As I'm closing out the show, my last question has absolutely nothing to do with financial planning and financial therapy, which may scare you and may excite you depending on how much coffee you've had already today. But let's say that you never discovered the financial services industry at all, right? Even the academic side of it, right? But money wasn't a factor in your decision making. What do you think you'd be doing right now?
Look at you. You're a practitioner of this of these questions. I asked this question myself, and now I'm on the other side. Oh, my goodness, Malcolm. You know what? I would be a writer. Okay. I've been writing poetry for 30 years now. I wrote my first poem when I was 11. I still have... The majority of my writings, I still have the original script. Want to put that in a book or something like that here one of these days. But I enjoy connecting with the inner self, the inner realm of thought, the inner realm of emotion, the outer realm of discovery, of purpose, of aligning thought and emotion and dreams and all this and outlook with what's going on here on the earth, and just really going into a deeper level of thought. And writing has allowed me to do that. Writing has allowed me to connect with people in an innate way, and just really understand all these, right? All these, I think it's helped me with all these emotions that we're talking about, really. So yes, I'd be a writer, and I'd just travel the world, and just, I would love to be James Baldwin-esque or Robert Frost or something like that. I mean, so yeah.
That's interesting. Well, thanks, man. This was great. I appreciate you coming on and doing this. Where can people find you if they want more Dr. Preston after this?
My firm website is Concurrent. FP as in financialplanning.com, and all of my handles, Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, is Dr. Preston Cherry.
Okay, so awesome.
Find that, you can find me.
Awesome. Well, Eric with an A, why don't you go ahead and take us home, man?
Absolutely. Malcolm, I appreciate you bringing the doctor on. This just basically echoes what you've said time and time again. Surround yourself with smart people, and you're just going to get smarter along the way. Obviously, that was very, very true just by the content that you brought today. So thank you for bringing him on the show. And of course, the last thank you goes to you, the listening audience. Thank you for tuning in and listening to the Tech Money Podcast with Malcolm Etheridge. If you have not subscribed to the podcast yet, please click the subscribe now button below. This way, when Malcolm comes out with a new podcast, it'll show up directly on your listening device. This makes it much easier to share these podcasts with your colleagues. Again, thanks for listening today. For everyone at Tech Money, our hope is that this show helped make you just a little smarter about your money.
This has been the Tech Money Podcast. For more information on today's topic, to review the show notes, or to catch up on past episodes, be sure to check out malcolmetheridge.com/podcast. And if you have an idea for a show topic that you'd like us to cover, or you want to send us feedback, the web address again is malcolmetheridge.com. You can also find Malcolm across all social media platforms at Malcolm on Money. This episode was written and created by Malcolm Etheridge, with the production, the editing, and sound controls powered by Top Advisor Marketing, Proudmouth. This has been a Malcolm on Money original. Thank you for listening. The information shared in this recording and by its guests represents the views and opinions of the guests and does not represent the views or opinions of the host. This content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. This content is not, nor is it intended to be a substitute for professional financial advice. It is always recommended that you seek the advice of your financial advisor or other qualified financial service provider with any questions you may have regarding your personal financial situation.